Gavo,
Agni,
fire,
Apibat,
placed in himself,
Ishvaraha,
capable.
Translation,
and then he posted Vajra, the son of Aniruddha, grandson of Lord Krishna, at Mathura as the king of Surasena.
Afterwards,
Maharaj Yudhisthira performed a
prajapatya
sacrifice and placed in himself the fire for quitting household life.
Purport.
Maharaj Yudhisthira, after placing Maharaj Parikshit on the imperial throne of Hastinapur, and after posting Vajra, the great-grandson of Lord Krishna, as the king of Mathura, accepted the renounced order of life. The system of four orders of life and four castes in terms of quality and work known as Varnashram Dharma is the beginning of real human life. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, as a protector of the system of human activities, timely retired from active life as a sannyasi, handing over the charge of the administration to a trained prince, Maharaj Parikshit. The scientific system of Varnashram Dharma divides human life into four divisions of occupation and four orders of life. The four orders of life as brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasi are to be followed by all, irrespective of the occupational division. Modern politicians do not wish to retire from active life, even if they are old enough. But Yudhisthira Maharaj, as an ideal king, voluntarily retired from active administrative life to prepare himself for the next life. Everyone's life must be so arranged that the last stage of life, say at least the last 15 or 20 years prior to death, can be absolutely devoted to the devotional service of the Lord to attain the highest perfection of life. It is really foolishness to engage oneself all the days of one's life in material enjoyment and fruit of activities, because as long as the mind remains absorbed in fruit of work for material enjoyment, there is no chance of getting out from conditioned life or material bondage. No one should follow the suicidal policy of neglecting one's supreme task of attaining the highest perfection of life, namely going back home, back to Godhead. Translation, then he posted Vajra, the son of Aniruddha, or the grandson of Lord Krishna, at Mathura as the king of Surasena. Afterwards, Maharaj Yudhisthira performed a prajapatya sacrifice and placed in himself the fire for quitting household life. So here we find further arrangements made by King Yudhisthira for ruling the kingdom, and then ultimately so that he could depart, that he could withdraw from his duties. So he made arrangements suitably so that he could renounce the world. That is the way in which he carried out his responsibility. If he were to suddenly leave and there was no one responsible to take charge, then there would have been chaos in the kingdom, and that he would not be doing his duty properly. So therefore he made proper arrangements so that the management of the kingdom would go on very nicely in his absence. And when that was done, then he made this major step in his life of renouncing. So the system was already there. It was not something that Yudhisthira concocted or did independently. This was a custom, we can say, a part of the Varnashram system. And as explained in the purport by Prabhupada, there are four ashramas or stages of life. And they're progressive in general, according to age. So the first part of life is the brahmachari life, which means Brahma in this case refers to studying the Vedas, and pursuing spiritual life. So that is the student. So one learns properly how to conduct oneself and to understand what is the real goal in life, which is spiritual. Of course, we know that the Vedas have several parts. Some of it is material. Karma Kanda is material. So nevertheless, someone who's a brahmachari should not devote himself solely to Karma Kanda, but he should study all the Vedas and understand that higher than the Karma Kanda is the Gyan Kanda, that is the section dealing with liberation and bhakti. So in any case, the brahmachari life lasts until one has gained knowledge properly and has been trained properly, and then he'll progress to household life, which is suitably named grihastha. Griha means house. Stha means to be situated. So one is situated in a house, which means household, which means family life. And then, because of his education, that grihastha can conduct himself properly and follow all the rules of scripture and still have his goal, a spiritual goal in his life. If he has no education at all previous to the, or no spiritual education previous to entering grihastha life, then he will have no spiritual goal at all and he'll simply get entangled. So the previous education as a brahmachari allows him as a grihastha to not get too much entangled, so that he can progress later on to vanaprastha. So this is also a very apt name. It means departing for the forest. So that means to perform austerities and renounce the previous position of grihastha. However, this is not a complete renunciation. It is a renunciation of children and house. It is not renunciation of wife. So the husband and the wife generally practice vanaprastha together. So it's a partial renunciation. So at this stage, they practice austerities or detachment from their previous household life where they had more enjoyments. So it's a chance to get accustomed to leading a more austere life. And then the last stage is called sannyas. Sannyas means to renounce everything. Nyasa means to give up, so sun means everything, so to give up everything. So this means that the person gives up even the wife, not only family members, but also the wife. So it's similar to vanaprastha, but then he's single. So we see here a progression, education, marriage, partial renunciation, and full renunciation. So that's the general system that is followed as far as ashramas are concerned. This is performed in cooperation with varnas, which are the occupations. So the occupations, of course, you're only supposed to get when you're adult, you know, so therefore, the Sudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahmana, it refers to adult occupations. So one is the laborer, the Sudra, the next caste is the Vaishya, or the agriculturalists, farmers, merchants, etc. Kshatriya is the ruling class, administrative class, government, warriors, etc. And the Brahmanas are the learned priests and scholars and teachers of the Vedas. Successively, the next higher is superior, so the Brahmana is at the top because he has the most Vedic knowledge. So, these are the occupational duties meant for the householder. It is the householder that has to work to support himself and his family. The vanaprastha doesn't support himself at all. He goes off to the forest and lives off the roots and the fruits. And the sannyasi, again, he'll just live in the forest or he'll accept the donations from the grihasthas. Even the brahmachari, he doesn't work. He gets donations from grihasthas also. So it's the grihasthas who are doing all the work for society. So they produce the food as the vaishyas, and they generate money as vaishyas also. And they administer all this, so they take taxes as kshatriyas, and make arrangements for all the people to live properly as kshatriyas. And sudras, of course, do the heavy labor work. And the brahmanas don't do anything. They just sit there. they take donations and they teach everybody and give advice. That's supposed to be their position. So in terms of, just like in the system of ashramas, it's a progression upwards towards renunciation. In terms of varna, it's a progression in terms of gunas. So the lowest is tamagun, and that's the sudras. So they're not very intelligent. They generally tend to be lazy. So they're the workers. But they have to be advised to work, otherwise they won't work properly. So mixture of tamagun and rajagun are the vaishyas. So they are more active than the sudras. They have a little more intelligence. And they concentrate on achieving their goals, and they love money. So they're the next category. And kshatriyas are a mixture of rajagun and sattvagun. Rajagun and sattvagun allows them to govern and control, but to do so in a non-exploitative way. That's the sattva portion of them. If they don't have that, they'll simply exploit everybody. So if we have a vaishya who becomes an administrator, then he will generally exploit all the people. So the real kshatriya has to have a mixture of sattva in it, so he becomes detached from his position and rules very nicely without greed. And then the top class is the sattvic person, that's the brahmana. So it is the brahmanas who are qualified most to study the Vedas, because they have more intellect, they have more sense control, they have an appreciation that they're not the material body, etc. So they can also practice jnana. The other castes can't get into jnana yoga, they're simply karma yogis. They follow the system of varnashram dharma. But the brahmana, if he's fixed in sattva, then he can go for jnana yoga or astanga yoga, because those are sattvic types of yoga. So in this way, we have classification according to gunas, according to which you work, and then we have classification according to age, young person, adult person, older person, and very old person, in terms of ashrama. But there are also a little bit of qualifications here. So the sudras are not qualified to become brahmacharis, so they don't get Vedic education. So vaishyas, kshatriyas, and brahmanas are allowed to study the Vedas, so they can become brahmacharis. Everybody, all castes are qualified to become grihastas, so even the sudras get married. and everyone else gets married in general. Vanaprastha, then the upper castes can take vanaprastha, not the sudras. So that's the vaishyas, kshatriyas, and brahmanas. And generally, sannyas is reserved for the brahmins. So in this way, according to qualification, also they are placed in the ashramas, as well as age. Then there's also within the age, it's also a little bit flexible, and it's also, they can say, the study of the Vedas as a brahmachari is usually done most by the brahmanas, and the vaishyas have much less of that, and the kshatriyas to some degree, but it's mostly a brahminical occupation to study the Vedas. And again, vanaprastha usually, so maybe the kshatriyas and the brahmanas will go and take vanaprastha. Very rarely we get the vaishyas doing it, or more rarely. The brahmachari, of course, is supposed to ideally continuous educations till he knows thoroughly one Veda, at least inside out. He can memorize it. He can memorize the whole thing by heart, recite it. And also, along with the Upanishads, the Samhita, Brahmanas and Aranyakas. And he should know the meaning, of course, also, ideally. So it is said that the Brahmachari starts when he's about 5 years old. And he sits in the house of the Acharya, or the ashram of the Acharya, and he learns until he's learned at least one Veda. If he's a little more ambitious, he can learn two Vedas, or three Vedas, or four Vedas. So we have some titles in India. The family name is Chaturvedi, which means a tertiary of that family. They learned four Vedas, the people of their family, or Trivedi, they learned three Vedas. Of course, that's more rare, but some people were capable of doing that. So they learned four Vedas. But it would take time. So therefore, at least until maybe 20 or 25 years, they would study the Vedas. And then they would go off and get married in most cases. However, it's also allowed that someone could not get married, and they would remain a brahmachari. And they wouldn't go on to the grihastha ashram at all. And in some cases, also the brahmachari, he would go from brahmachari life, and he would skip out even vanaprastha, and he'd go to sannyas. Just go to sannyas stage. So that is still practiced in India. We see that, for instance, Madhva Sampradaya, they educate their brahmacharis, and then they become sannyas. One becomes a sannyas right after that. Whereas in the Sri Sampradaya, generally they go through all ashramas, they become brahmacharis, they become grihasthas, they take vanaprastha, then they take sannyas. So both systems are there. In any case, we'll see that the system of Prabhupada calls the scientific system of Arnashram, not science in the sense of test tubes and experiments and atoms and protons, not that type of science, but it's a precise system. It's a very precise system with certain goals in mind, and if practiced properly, it gives proper results. So what is the whole goal of that system of making varnas and ashramas, etc.? Whole purpose is, one, let everybody get their food and their shelter. That's the responsibility of a good administration. At least the people get protected. They get enough food, they get shelter, they can raise their families. That's one purpose of a social system. So that's what the varnashram system is on the material level. So that's called artha. Also, they have a little bit extra enjoyment. That's called kama. So they get a little bit higher than a little recreational activity, something like this, some extra things. They have to do that within rules and regulations. As we see in all societies, they have rules for the people. You know, don't lie, don't cheat. If you do, you throw it in prison. So we have some basic rules. But the Varnashram system goes a little further than that, because the goal is not just to keep everybody in order and cause disruption and get your belly filled, etc., the artha and the kama. It's not only for that. There's a higher goal also. So that's artha, dharma, kama, moksha. That's the ultimate goal, to get out of the material world. So the whole system, it looks a little strange from the material point of view. The whole goal of supplying everybody with all their needs is to reject all the needs and go for liberation, which we don't see in other societies. So this was moksha was the ultimate goal of all of this, to get out of the material world. And therefore, the whole system of ashramas is guided for that purpose. Ultimately, vanaprastha and then sannyas. Give up household life, renounce partially, renounce fully. And then the whole the varnas also go from sudra, practice as a sudra for many lifetimes, progress to a vaisha after some lifetimes, and then you evolve. The jiva goes up to a kshabika kshatriya. Then when he's in that mixture of goodness, finally he gets up to sattva-gun. Then it becomes brahminical, and then when you're brahminical, then you can study the Vedas in detail, and you can go for moksha by practicing jnana or bhakti. So both the ashrams and the varnas are leading towards spiritual life. So in spiritual life, then we have two goals. The one we reach through jnana, that is understanding we're atma, we're not the body, we're the soul. And then if you do that and you fix in that, you can get moksha or liberation. The other goal above that is to accept the Supreme Lord, recognize the Supreme Lord, and you practice bhakti, and then you get prema. So Lord Chaitanya says, actually, though it's commonly said that the four goals of the social system of dharma, varnashram, is artha, dharma, kama, moksha, he says, there's a fifth goal, prema. So beyond the jnana, then we have bhakti as well. So when we put bhakti in there, then it becomes a daiva varnashram system. So that's the proper system. It won't work without a spiritual goal behind it. If we take the spiritual goal out, we just have artha, dharma, kama. The dharma acts as the control for the people. Control your senses, get punished if you do sinful activity or crimes, etc. And there is no spiritual goal, not even moksha. Then it is just a material dharma. So that's the what we call the materialistic varnashram system, atheistic varnashram system. It will appear to be nice because everything's in order, but it will ultimately fail because people can never be satisfied with that. In other words, we can supply all your material facilities very nicely in an expert government, but ultimately, people are still dissatisfied. They got all their sense gratification they could possibly get, but still they're not satisfied. So, of course, they can go to more extreme forms of sense gratification, more and more extreme forms, but ultimately, they're still frustrated. So, in other words, that type of system doesn't lead to real satisfaction. So there has to be a spiritual goal within that system. So it may be moksha, or it may be bhakti. In any case, that has to be there. So therefore, it's important that we have the ashramas there gradually so that people can begin to become more contemplative as they grow old. But you can't become contemplative unless you've got proper education previous to becoming a householder. So the education has to, as a child, has to have that spiritual input into it. Then as a grihastha, you can also look forward to getting back to that spiritual goal after you become distracted for some time, and therefore we have the other ashramas there. So, in other words, this system is scientific, we could say, or precise, because if properly instituted, then people will be satisfied. It will be a stable system. It will not crumble. Because not only have the material aspect taking care of the people physically, we also have the spiritual aspect. So that spiritually also they become satisfied. And then the society can go on nicely. So that is the ideal system. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, though he took sannyas, and that of course he took impersonal sannyas, the Mayavad sannyas, he followed the varnashram system in that way, we see that he also rejects the whole system several times. When he was talking to the people in Udupi, the Madhva people there, he asked them, okay, what is the goal of human life? And they said, follow the varnashram system. And he said, no, he rejected that. And in talks with Ramananda Roy and others, then when varnashram, I think Ramananda, that was his first thing, well, what is the goal? Then he said varnashram, and Lord Chaitanya said, external. No, you don't want that. So we see that often Lord Chaitanya rejected that whole system. But then at the same time, we see that here it's getting praised. Varnashram system, very good. And the king's following the system, etc. And you know, all the manus are instituting this whole system. And from the third canto onward, we get a history of all the different manus, from Swayambhuva Manu onwards, and all the kings in their lines establishing the system and making sure it works. And then we have Yudhisthira also making it work. And then we have Parikshit doing it as well. So at the same time, Lord Chaitanya says, Varnashram system, useless or external. So it looks a little bit contradictory. Why we get the, on the other hand, emphasis on Varnashram, on the other hand, the rejection of it by Lord Chaitanya. So the intention of Lord Chaitanya is that bhakti is independent of everything. And whether you have varnashram or don't have it, still you should concentrate on the on bhakti. And if you absorb yourself in varnashram and have no bhakti, it's also useless. So in other words, the emphasis should be on devotional service, surrender to Krishna, as Krishna says at the end of Bhagavad Gita, give up all dharmas and surrender unto me. So therefore, there's an emphasis in Lord Chaitanya's movement on concentration on bhakti. So therefore, everything else becomes secondary. And we can say a reason for that is that some, many people in India are very attached to the institution of the Varnashram, to the extent that it will, let's say, dominate even their bhakti. So they never want to give it up, and they have to do their bhakti through the Varnashram system, so that bhakti becomes dependent on Varnashram. So Lord Chaitanya's idea, no, bhakti is independent, so therefore it's okay, it's all external, like that. So at the same time, we should not think that therefore Lord Chaitanya said everybody should give up the Varnashram. He didn't say that either, because he himself was in the Varnashram system. He took sannyas within the Varnashram system. He acted as a sannyasi within the Varnashram system. So by his conduct, we see that he didn't reject that system at all. And we see that later acharyas also did not reject that system. They followed as much as possible that system. They didn't break the rules of the system. So therefore, when Lord Chaitanya rejects that system, he doesn't mean that everyone should not follow it completely, but he's simply emphasizing the fact that the bhakti is independent and we should not be too attached to that system, or whatever it is. And that we'll find, the principle we'll find in the definition of bhakti given by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion, where he says, jnana karma janavritam. Pure bhakti should not be covered or obstructed by karma or jnana. He doesn't say sunya, that you completely reject it. But in practicing it, it should not obstruct the bhakti. So in other words, bhakti is always independent and the other things can be used, but we should never depend on other processes. Our dependence is on bhakti. So that is the proper way in which we should practice. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about the Varnashram rules. So he says they are secondary bhakti. Says primary bhakti or mukhya vidhi. The main rules of bhakti are the 64 angas that we discussed in the Nectar of Devotion. Hearing, chanting, remembering, sadhu sangha, etc. These are primary angas of bhakti, which means that they're very intention in their practice is to please Krishna. Whereas the rules of Varnashram, they have other goals. Social stability, art, getting your material things, going to Svargaloka, so many other goals are there in the intentions of the rules, regulations of Varnashram system. And we can add bhakti to that, but it's a secondary feature. So we can, and that's why in Varnashram you can do karma yoga, and then you can offer the results to Krishna. So it's kind of like bhakti. But the original intention was something different. Whereas the angas of bhakti, hearing, chanting, and remembering, their original intention is please the Lord. So they're called the mukhya vidhis, the main rules of bhakti. So the rules of Varnashram are in themselves are not considered to be bhakti, their intention is something else. But we can, of course, offer the results to the Supreme Lord and make them spiritualized. And we can use them for their functions of social stability or physical stability, that is, cleanliness, etc. And we must do that because we have bodies and we're living in society. So we need to follow some rules. So therefore, we try to follow the Varnashramic rules as much as possible. So therefore, they're assistant to our bhakti. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls them the gunavidhi, which means the secondary rules, to help us in terms of our gunas, etc. So we're not dependent on them, but they assist us because we do have a material body at this time. So therefore, we have rules for cleanliness and social interaction, which are taken from the Varnashram system. This helps us stay in good health and have harmonious relationships with other people in society. So to that extent we follow. So they're called the gunavidhi, or secondary rules of bhakti, and the primary rules are the ones that we must follow. So in that way we don't reject the rules, but we use them appropriately without too much attachment. So in this way we say the system is, if it is instituted properly, then it achieves its goals in terms of stability of society plus satisfaction, because we have a spiritual goal there. Okay, any question?
Help me understand the difference between Varnashram
Dharma and Bhagavad Dharma. Well, Bhagavad Dharma in general refers to bhakti, as far as I can see. We call that bhakti, Bhagavad Dharma. This is direct bhakti yoga, which is hearing, chanting, remembering, hearing Bhagavatam, doing kirtan, etc. That's Bhagavad Dharma with the goal of prema. Whereas the other dharma is, you know, various artha dharma, kama moksha, plus prema.
So it seemed that when Prabhupada established ISKCON, it was really, he was after a brahminical society.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you could call that a Bhagavad, you know, following Bhagavad Dharma guidelines. Whereas,
as you're saying, Varnashram Dharma is more of a,
it's not really emphasized so much as
more of a,
I've heard it termed as a safety net. If you can't stay on the Bhagavad Dharma,
Well, it's like karma yoga is one level, that we have jnana yoga, bhakti yoga. So for people who are not qualified for bhakti, they have no faith, they should follow rules and regulations. So let them follow the rules and regulations of karma yoga and Varnashrams, because at least indirectly it's headed towards bhakti with this whole system. But if they just follow a social system without, and rules and regulations, political society without any spiritual goal, then that's a much lower level. So real civilization should have a spiritual goal, so therefore Varnashram is the basis of civilization. But obviously it's not the final goal, because bhakti is higher than that. Well, most people in the Varnashram system don't make the distinction too clearly. Other than they say spiritual, but then for the jnanis, it may mean sayuja. If it's the devotees, it could be sarupya, salokya, sarasthi, and then prema also. So like Sri Vaishnavas talk about moksha, but they say it's prema, that is going to Vaikuntha, in other words.
So minimum would be moksha?
Yeah, for them, yeah. Moksha would mean going to Vaikuntha and dasya rasa.
You're speaking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu following Varnashram to a certain extent. So we see in past times, like when he got married twice, the first wife he left, and then she died from separation when he was gone.
Yeah.
The second wife he left her also.
Sannyas.
Took sannyas when he was only 24.
Yeah.
And then even as a sannyasi, he was doing all sorts of stuff that sannyasis wouldn't do at the time. So it's kind of like he was following and he wasn't.
Yeah.
And then we have, like, that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then we have Nityananda, who was also a sannyasi, but he was like full
avadut. He was avadut.
Yeah, in order to preach to the masses, he would, and he wouldn't consider any formality.
Yeah.
He would simply ask them to preach. So, like, as we're worshipping and following this movement of Chaitanya Gauranitai, those examples that we should consider, or are they just pastimes in order to...
Yeah. Well, as far as Lord Chaitanya is concerned, his actions, such as eating at the wrong house, like in Mathura, he ate at the house of someone who wasn't a Brahmana, whereas Sannyasi should eat at a house of a Brahmana, or at least of a higher caste. But then he ate at the caste of a reject, because Subhuti Rai had been rejected because the Muslims sprinkled water on him, so he wasn't even a Sudra. He was worse than a Sudra. But Lord Chaitanya ate at his house, so that was like, according to strict Varnashramic rules, it's forbidden to do that. He shouldn't have done that. Huh? But he did it. Why? Because it's a higher principle there. He's a devotee. So therefore, the devotional rules are superior to the Varnashramic rules. That's what he was demonstrating there. So yes, he worked within the Varnashram system to some degree, being a sannyasi, and he would follow the daily rules and rituals of a sannyasi, etc. It was expected. At the same time, then he also did things because he was a Vaishnava, and we find that he was singing and dancing instead of studying Vedanta when the Varnasi sannyasis criticized him. So then again, he wasn't following exactly the proper conduct, but we do have Vaishnava sannyasis, so then it's not just my Vaishnava, they're not the standard for everybody, so Vaishnava sannyasis could do that, it's not a problem for them. Read Bhagavatam instead of Vedanta Sutras, so that wouldn't be breaking the rules of sannyas. And even for honoring the person regardless of his caste, that would be a higher principle also, in spite of which would be acceptable for the Vaishnavas. Though you'll find that we can find scriptural evidence for that, but generally we'll find that many other sampradayas with sannyasis also wouldn't do that. They would be very strict also, and not eat with lower castes, etc. Even Sri Vaishnavas, the sannyasi probably even today will not eat with, he won't even eat in association with other people. He'll eat alone or only with people on his level, or Brahmins. He won't even eat in the presence of other people who are not Brahmins. So some people follow like that. But if you go to my scripture, then of course you'll find examples of things that happen like that, and it's permissible. So Vaishnava conduct is a little bit different from the regular Varnashrama conduct. And of course then another aspect of Lord Chaitanya is out of ecstasy, he doesn't know what's happening, so he's beyond all the rules when he's in ecstasy of prema. And that's what Nityananda is all the time. So he breaks all the rules all the time, but it's not intentional, it's because he's has prema. So that's the non-Varnashramic aspect of the Sampradaya, where in prema there's no rules. They're not bound by the rules of Varnashram at all. Which is kind of equivalent to the Babaji, one says, because the Babaji is beyond the sannyas. He's not a sannyasi, he's not a grihasta, he's not part of the Varnashram system at all. No Varna and no Ashrama. Yeah? So then he's free of all those rules. Yeah.
It seems like in Kali Yuga, the non-existence or non-manifestation of the Varnashram is predominantly due to lack of humility, because Varnashram does instigate an equality, an obvious equality, and due to this obvious inequality, there is an obvious different behavior and duties that are attached to each individual. And then it seems like on top of that lack of humility, because in order to be, if someone says it's a Brahmana, they are not true, obviously there must be a respect. So there's a line, that line is defined by humility to be able to accept what one can do and what one cannot do. Yeah. That means he has to accept what the other can do and cannot do.
Yeah.
And it seems like nowadays it's even fueled even more by this type of politically correctness.
Everybody's equal.
So on top of that, not many people are humble to recognize their capacity.
Yeah.
Everybody is encouraged to be equal to everyone else. So I don't know, it just appears that in this kind of situation, Balakram just cannot manifest.
Because of this lack of humility and fueled by the political correctness. I think in the discussion of the Parikshit with discussing the four legs of Dharma, etc., and then the sinful activities that arise, I think the last thing was the pride. Pride was there also as one of the factors. Hoarding money was there also, as well as, you know, the four legs of Dharma and the principles, illicit sex and uncleanliness and all the sense gratification, etc., then the gambling, and says also where pride is there. So pride is a factor also. It grows in Kali Yuga, so it destroys the whole system. Which is an aspect of false ego. And then false ego is ultimately ignorance. So Kali Yuga has got more ignorance, so then obviously pride is going to rise up, and identity with the body and all these sort of things. And because of that, then we also get more conflicts, more wars, because everybody's got the false ego, and they have to fight with each other. So even unqualified people think they're qualified, and then we have all sorts of problems that way. And of course, then we get the whole system cannot work because the unqualified people think they're qualified. And then they make a mess of everything also. So get a lot of problems as a result of that.
How, if Varnashram is secondary to bhakti, so how can you focus on the development of Varnashram or executing it without having it cover over your bhakti?
Well, we have to be careful. If we're going to institute Varnashram, we have to be very careful that it doesn't eclipse or obstruct the bhakti in any way. So that's what we see would happen, because we do see in India, in Lord Chaitanya's time also, even then, that because of the strict adherence to the Varnashram system, they were reluctant to do bhakti, and they would criticize the devotion. They would criticize Haridas Thakur, or criticize Kalavacha Sridhar, or, you know, criticize Advaitacharya for, you know, feeding Haridas Thakur or associating with him or whatever like that. So in that system, the caste consciousness also became very prominent, and therefore anyone who was a lower caste, even if they're a great devotee, they would not respect them properly. So if the Varnashram system gets too strong, then we start identifying with caste, etc. So the Brahmins are better than the other people, and then they won't associate with them, etc. So, you know, we have to watch out for such things. If we do start categorizing, then it's not based upon, it cannot be based upon, you know, material categories at all. We have to also see that, have that, understand that they're also, you know, Vaishnavas. So we'd be careful when we do that.
For me, an example of Haridas Thakur, he was born outside of the Varnashram in a Muslim family, but he considered himself untouchable and very humble and wouldn't even go in the temple because he felt so poor, and Lord Chaitanya was very pleased by his like the humility and so, like, considering, well, at least myself, born out of born in Malecha Desh in Australia, in this very, like, materialistic, meat-eating families, you know, fully untouchable. Like, what should be our, like, if we're approaching Varnashram, should we proudly think, oh, I can just become a Brahmin now, not considering where we've come from, or is it like you just transcend your birth and all that?
Well, that is... in the Bhagavatam, there's a verse there that says if a dog eater, who's beyond, lower than the Sudra, chants the holy name or remembers the lotus feet of the Lord once with pure devotion, then he becomes qualified to do whatever a Brahmana can do. So in other words, that's because his karmas have got destroyed. As Ajamil got all his karmas destroyed by just saying Narayana accidentally. So with great devotion and purity, we chant the name of the Lord, then our karmas are also gone, so we can qualify for everything a Brahmin can do. That's why in second initiation you get a Brahmin thread. because becoming a Vaishnava and getting Vaishnava mantras, we surpass the Brahmana. So that's the theoretical thing. Now, of course, you can always argue, well, you got the Brahmin thread, but you're not acting like a Brahmana, you don't know all the Vedas, you don't know how to do all the sacrifices, so that's there, but at least in terms of the Vaishnava concept, that the Vaishnava is superior to the Brahmana. surrender to the Lord is a higher principle than just studying the Vedas or being a sattva-gun. So even if the Vaishnava has not completely surpassed the gunas or whatever, his goal is much higher. Therefore, he's given much more respect.
Some devotees argue that actually Lord Chaitanya was not promoting Varnashram Dharma, a little bit the opposite, because he started by saying that we all should dress anyway. So how can you establish Varnashram Dharma in a society?
When he rejects it. Well, we see in Lord Chaitanya, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that he does reject it an awful lot. He downgrades it. So that's why I was saying that we find a little contradiction here, because there's more emphasis put on the Varnashram system in the Bhagavatam, because the kings are following it and Yudhisthira is following it and he's implementing it, etc. We have the whole story here of Parikshit trying to maintain that Dharma in spite of the fact that Kali was beating the legs of the bull who was Dharma, Varnashram system. So we get, let's say, a little more emphasis in the Bhagavatam on that. At the same time, we have Lord Chaitanya saying it's not so good. So, as I explained, Lord Chaitanya is not that he's simply rejecting it, but rather he's emphasizing the fact that bhakti is independent and should not become dependent on Varnashram. And even if there is no Varnashram system, we still go on with the process of bhakti, and we shouldn't argue that I can't do it because there's no Varnashram system. So whether there is or isn't, we can do bhakti. At the same time, if we find elements of the system which are very useful for us, then we can practice those as long as they don't interfere with the bhakti. The Vaishnava etiquette, mean when we see differences between Vaishnavas you're talking about, or what? So in Varnashram system, we have rules of which are quite strictly defined in terms of Varna. So everyone has to respect the Brahmana in that system, and the lower has to respect the higher. So the Sudra has to respect everybody. That is the Vaishya, Kshatriya, and the Brahmana, etc. And the Vaishya has to respect the Kshatriya and the Brahmana, and the Kshatriya has to respect the Brahmana. So the Brahmanas are at the top of that system. And there's the rules are quite strict. In Vaishnava society, because we're not talking about gunas and varnas or anything, we see in terms of devotion only. Nevertheless, we see in terms of grades of devotion also. So we get the Kanishka, the Madhyama, and the Uttama. And if we don't make those distinctions, it's difficult for us to advance. So therefore, we have to treat them differently. So if we're a Madhyama, then we give instructions to the Kanishta, and then we give service to the Uttama, like this, or the higher one, whoever it may be. So this is a good system for advancing spiritually. It's not judged upon material qualification, but on bhakti, which is spiritual. So obviously we give greater respect to the person who's up in a more highly spiritually elevated. It doesn't mean we disrespect the person on the lower level, but we give more respect to the person on the higher level. We respect all Vaishnavas. So that's good for our advancement. So we say that within the society of Vaishnavas, we make distinctions according to advancement, not according to material gunas and varnas or ashramas. Now, we do also have a little bit of varnashram system because we have sannyasis and grihasthas and vanaprasthas and brahmacharis. And then for that reason, we also introduce a little bit of that respect also. So the sannyasi gets more respect than the grihastha in general, like that. So that's the varnashramic system. But higher than that, of course, is respect as a Vaishnava. So therefore, even if he's a grihastha, but he's very spiritually advanced, we give more respect to him than a sannyasi who's less spiritually advanced. So there's two systems there operating. The ashram system from varnashram and then the spiritual system.
Senior
by knowledge or senior by age?
Like, we still have to, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, well, just because you're older doesn't mean you're more advanced, but we shouldn't like act like that. Cause that's
So that's why we have the two systems. We have the more varnashramic system according to seniority, which is like something like varna, you know, where we have the brahmanas respect or whatever like that, or age, or it's a material qualification in one sense. So in the varnashram system also, you respect according to varna, according to age, according to wealth, according to varna. So many different types of respect are there, which are all material. So the strongest one for us is the spiritual, but then we also follow the varnashramic to some extent. So therefore age also counts, and ashram may also count, these things also. But ultimately it's a spiritual advancement. It's the highest one we give respect to. Okay. Hare Krishna.